day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and as always, I'm glad you've joined us. Of all the political jurisdictions here in Southeast Michigan, I've always found Macomb County one of the most fascinating. It's often a bellwether for presidential elections. Where Macomb goes, so too often does the country. It was once a Democratic stronghold with really powerful union loyalty and interests, but it also became home to the Reagan Democrat era before voting twice for Barack Obama and then twice for Donald Trump. Now, whether Macomb is still a bellwether for the country's political stance is kind of hard to know. One thing we do know is that the county, like many other places in Southeast Michigan, is changing. It was once known exclusively as a white working class jurisdiction, but now there are many more immigrants and African Americans who've moved to the county over the last decade. And that means a shift in the political winds again. But Macomb, of course, still leans conservative overall and largely votes conservative politicians into office. A little later today, we're going to talk about Republicans and what they might do to try to win over more urban voters. We're going to talk with a policy analyst at the Manhattan Institute, a conservative, who says he's got ideas about the way the Republican Party can win more urban votes. I'm really interested in those ideas, and I think you're really going to enjoy the arguments that he's making. But first, for now, we really want to talk about Macomb County, how the primaries are shaking out in the legislative and congressional races in Macomb County, and how the county overall is changing, is shifting. Is it becoming more left-leaning? Is it digging in more as conservative? To talk about this, we've got two people who know an awful lot about politics in the county. Jeff Payne is managing editor at the Macomb Daily. Jeff Payne, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for having me.
And Anthony Forlini is the Macomb County Clerk. Anthony, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for having us.
So, Clerk Forlini, I want to start with you and talk about how things have changed from a district drawing perspective, I guess, in Macomb. We've talked already about Wayne County and Oakland County and how different things look now that we've got citizens drawing the political jurisdictions instead of politicians. Give us a sense of how much change came to Macomb County, both in terms of the legislature and the congressional districts.
Well, Stephen, I think it's changed quite a bit. Now, the thing to note, though, is citizens drew both times. It just didn't happen to be partisan at one time, and this time, supposedly, it was nonpartisan. But I'm not sure that really anything changed when you talk about how things might be gerrymandered, because the lines are all over the place. What's interesting, when I look at the map of Macomb compared to the last map, is let's talk about the state reps. There was 10 districts in the county when I was there. Now there's 14. So why is there more? It's because of how they kind of ignored the county lines. They went across county lines into Wayne, into Oakland, and even into St. Clair, and developed so many more districts. And when I look at it, I could have made a lot of arguments against the last map. I can probably make just as many, if not more, arguments against the new map. And so it's just a map, and it's how people are giving up. And I look at for the first time, I think in a very, very long time, our Macomb County has gone down into Wayne County, into Detroit. And there might have been some crossover in Oakland before, but there's certainly county lines seem to have been ignored. and the districts are a little bit more spread out. My old district 24, which I think is now 62, used to represent, well, I first represented Harrison Township, St. Clair Shores, which was an area that had a common interest of the lakefront. Then when it got redistricted when I was there, and it went more along the Hall Road corridor, probably didn't make much sense to do that, if you ask me. Hmm. But now it crosses Chesterfield over into Fraser, including your township in St. Clair Shores and Roseville. Those communities have very little in common.
Hmm. So you know, one of the things that the group of citizens who, you know, were brought together to draw these maps talked about was trying to create different communities of interest, trying to create commonality and common interest among people who wouldn't necessarily think they had common interests otherwise. This in their estimation explains some of the community crossing that they did, both intra and inter county. Anthony, you don't seem to buy that as a reasonable explanation.
Well, it is an explanation, and I look at it, and I'm not sure that you could have made that argument with any map that came out before or that's come out now. I'm not sure that the citizen initiative was much more different than the elected official citizen initiative that was before that. I think it's very difficult to put these maps together, and I represented for the most part in the past a 50-50 district. Mm-hmm. You know, when I represented Harrison Township, St. Clair Shores, it probably leaned a little more Democrat when I won the first time. When they redistricted me, it leaned a little bit more Republican. I like a 50-50 spread. I like competitive districts. I come from a competitive district, and I think that influenced my decision making and what I did, because I had to take everything into account. Whereas some districts, you can go down into Detroit where they were it was not diversified, or you can go up to northern Macomb County or up into the town where it wasn't diversified. They kind of stick in their quarters, and that's just the way it's going to be. So this might mix things up a little bit, and I'm sure it will.
Jeff Payne, I want to bring you into the conversation here. You are covering, of course, all of this change and the races that it has produced for our August 2nd voting. Give us a sense from your perspective what's different and what, I guess, what the dynamic looks like as we get closer to this August 2nd primary.
Well, I think first and foremost, when you talk about what's different, you're going to have Detroiters representing Macomb County residents. I can't tell you the last time
that was
many
true.
Of these legislative districts have crossed 8 miles.
Yeah.
You know, certainly not in my professional lifetime. So that's certainly of interest. Looking at the 11th district, for example, where we kind of follow the I-94 corridor down into the east side of the city, and you've got a glut of candidates running there, mostly Democrat, and it would appear. Certainly, the person who might emerge from that field may indeed be a Detroiter. Hmm. It's fascinating times for us. When these maps came out, it even took us by surprise a little bit.
Hmm. So let's talk about some specific races. You've got two congressional districts that reach into Macomb County in one way or another. Let's start with the 9th, Jeff. There are two Republicans running in the primary there, Representative Lisa McClain, who's running for re-election and hoping to get the 9th district seat, and newcomer Michelle Donovan, who's challenging her. Let's talk about that district and what's going on.
Yeah, I would imagine early on that, you know, even when she realized she was going to have a primary challenge, that maybe McClain didn't expect it to be as spirited as what it's been. Hmm. But Donovan has been out there, you know, particularly in you know, the most voter-dense base portion of the district in northern Macomb and up into southern St. Clair, really, really pounding the bricks. You know, has made it maybe a bit more of a challenge than what McClain probably would have expected or likes, I would imagine.
And what are the issues that are driving the competition in that district? In a lot of districts, in both at the congressional and at the state legislative level, we're seeing former President Donald Trump play an important role in the way that people talk about who they are and what they want to do. Of course, there's this kind of litmus test out there that seems to ask people to weigh in on what they think happened during the 2020 election, with a lot of people being pressured to say, hey, I think maybe Donald Trump won Michigan in 2020. What's that look like in this 9th district race?
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly those undertones are part of it. You know, whether it's, you know, McClain's continued association with Trump or, you know, Donovan, you know, rolling out floats and parades that speak about, you know, grassroots patriots and America first, and, you know, all of these sort of buzzwords that we came to expect with the Trump campaign. That stuff is very prevalent in this race as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, beyond that, I mean, I think, you know, certainly economic issues, inflation, the price of gas, you know, those sorts of things had an important part of the dialogue between these two.
Yeah. Clerk Forlini, let's talk about the 10th district, which is also, of course, Macomb also has some really interesting races going on both sides of the political spectrum.
Yeah, well, the 9th is what I think many consider a toss-up. Like you said, it takes up a good part of Macomb County, although it is the southern part, and it does pull, but it pulls in a heavy Republican area of Shelby Township, Utica, Macomb Township. It goes up into Rochester Hills. So I we look at this as a toss-up seat. I think there's some good candidates running on both sides, and I think that this will probably be one of the more spirited campaigns in the area. Who's gonna take the town, the new town?
Yeah. Jeff, talk about that 10th district and the folks. There's some familiar names in it, and I think if things turn out in maybe predictable ways, we might have a real barn burner in the fall in that 10th district.
Yeah, if you believe some of the polling that's out there, you know, you would think it's Carl Marlinga's race to lose on the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm.
Although
really,
you know,
familiar name in Macomb County, of course.
Yeah, we've reported on that throughout the summer, and you know, have been accused of you know, maybe tipping our thumb on the scale of the race a little bit. You know, as far as name recognition countywide, it's tough to get around that. And then on the Republican side, you have a primary, you know, probably in name only. We're taking a deeper dive into this race this weekend, and specifically the money that John James has raised for his campaign is pretty eye popping, and this is money that he has not had to spend on the primary. So, you know, expect to see a lot of TV, radio, and newspaper spots. And I do think it has the potential of being a pretty nasty campaign this fall, presuming it is James versus Marlinga.
Hmm.
With some of the baggage Marlinga brings along, you know, fair or unfair, and with the fact that James doesn't even live in the district. In fact, isn't even close to the district.
Right, right. He's more of an Oakland County figure than a Macomb figure. Clerk Forlini, I want to talk a little about elections and the way that they run. There have been, of course, lots of disruptions to our democratic process recently. There are lots of concerns that some people have about how safe and secure elections are. Give us a sense of how that's playing out in Macomb.
Well, you know, I'm a fairly new clerk. I've been around a year and a half. I came in after the 2020 election, and certainly the clerk's position has normally been somewhat quiet, right, in the past. That hasn't been the case since I've been here, and or nationwide, for that matter. And what I wanted to do was be able to answer questions. So when people say certain things happened or elections were stolen, well, how are they stolen? And I want to, deep dive into it without getting into the politics of it. I wanted to understand how these elections could be influenced specifically at the ballot box and through the processes that we have. And there was allegations that perhaps our server had been hacked. And I thought, well, do we know that? And I couldn't answer that with any kind of certainty. So what I did was I said, all right, we're going to be able to answer these with certainty. We're going to do certain things. And one of the things we did, I'm the only in the state clerk to have done this in the state, was I did a forensic audit of our county server. And we did a deep dive into the server to see if there were any changes, any outside influences, were there weaknesses in our system. And going through all that, we found areas that potentially could have been vulnerable, but were not compromised, and we shut down areas that possibly could have been a problem. For instance, we were the first in the state to shut off the modems. Now, the reason I shut them off was Verizon wasn't going to give us our records. And I thought, for God's sakes, how can we go forward if we don't know what's in those records? So I shut it down. They eventually did give it to us, for short of a subpoena. And the good news was we were never compromised along the motives. We've done with a forensic audit, nothing had happened that was improper. But, prior clerks never collected the USB drives from each of the individual clerks, which I thought was a problem. So we started doing that. We've got imaging now of all the ballots. Mm. So it's easy to FOIA. So we're taking the processes. And the big thing we're doing right now is recruiting poll workers. We are going through a countywide. Today I've got two different conversations I'm going to have with two different groups about trying to get people to volunteer, because we need people. We need both Democrats and Republicans. We can't have good elections if it's just one side or the other. So we're making a very heavy push to help the local clerks get a diversity of election workers.
Mm, mm. Before we break, I want to go back to something that I detected in both of your answers about these new districts and the way in which they're drawn. When we were talking about the southern part of the county and the fact that legislative districts now go, some of them, into Wayne County, into Detroit, you both noted this kind of, surprise or shock that the idea that someone from Detroit might represent people from Macomb or vice versa, something that we haven't seen in a long time. But I want to talk just a little more about why that is such a surprising or shocking development. What is it about that? And I think this gets to some of the more regional tensions and politics that we see. We shouldn't just skip over that, I think. Jeff, I'm going to start with you. Talk about why that's such a big deal.
From our perspective, it was a big deal because it's never happened before. And both socioeconomically and politically, it probably makes a lot of sense to loop in places like South Warren and the east side of Detroit together. But for whatever reason, you know, a lot of it being political. That had just never happened before. And it could lead to certainly a change dynamic in those areas. Will it, you know, for the better? I personally think that could be could certainly give folks in places like South Warren, East Points, a little bit more active representation in Lansing.
Mm, yeah. Clark Forlean, I've only got about a minute and a half left, but talk about you've been in Macomb County politics a long time. What is the big deal if somebody from Detroit represents folks from Macomb?
No, I think it's awesome. I got to tell you, when I was a state rep, oftentimes I try to figure out the school problems that we were seeing and the problems that were really rooted in Detroit with some of the issues that were going on there. I'd have to go down there and try to listen. And that was an unusual thing because it was outside of my district. Now, with these borders, the way they're drawn up, I think it gives us a little bit more empathy both ways, what the suburbs might feel and what the city might feel from the perspective of Lansing and policy. And I think it'll make the reps a little bit more empathetic for each side. I really think it's a great thing to bring these things together. It's going to cause some problems on election day when, we have some of the results here in Macomb County done or not done, or Detroit has theirs done or not done, and we're trying to get the results in. But that's an administrative issue. It's not a policy issue. I think the policy going forward, you know, if you represent two different, I don't want to say competing interests, I think that what's going to happen is they're going to be able to have to compromise and understand that there's various aspects to the solution. And representing, let's say, both sides of 8 Mile, if you want to make that the dividing line, I think that that's a good thing.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Anthony Forlini and Jeff Payne, it was great to have both of you here to talk about what's going on in Macomb as we get ready to go to the polls on August 2nd. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you, Stephen.
Yeah. Take care.
Okay, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what Republicans might be able to do to make themselves more attractive to city voters, people in places like Detroit who vote overwhelmingly Democratic. I think we'll have a pretty spirited conversation with Michael Hendricks, who's a senior fellow and director of state and local policy at the Manhattan Institute. He's got some ideas about how Republicans can appeal better to urban voters. I have some real questions about those ideas. Stay tuned for more Detroit Today.